Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth. Today with us is John Miller, or Johnny Miller. He is a British journalist who is stuck in Russia. Russia just won't let him out. I think on a spiritual level, maybe. There's a problem with that. Welcome to the show. If you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, how you came to the prison of Russia, the gray land with no goods and 1 million sanctions, and we can begin with that
Yeah, well,
and all
thanks
the
so
other
much for
stereotypes.
having thanks so much for having me. It's good to see you. So yeah, I mean, I'm a long history as a journalist, reported in probably about 40 countries around the world, and Libya, Syria, Africa, Asia, all the rest. And then when the conflict in Ukraine started, I got a call from a news broadcaster to go there. I actually went to Kiev to start with, but then I left Kiev only after a couple of days because, my views are quite clear. I'm very critical of the Ukrainian NATO position. And at that time in Kiev, the Russians had surrounded it, in inverted commas, surrounded it. And people were being speared. Anybody seen as, sympathetic to the Russian side, people were being disappeared. Journalists were killed under
Oh,
mysterious
really?
circumstances. Yeah, things that some people know we can't really talk about because of family issues, but there's some really dodgy things going on there. And I know, I mean, I've been deported from a couple of countries before, once very violently in the Middle East. So I know how quickly the net can close. And, in Ukraine, when the war starts, laws change. You suddenly, people criticize Ukraine before, but when, and it's that's normal in war. In Russia, it's become more, when the conflict started, there's more repression in Russia. It's normal when a country goes to war. So I left there pretty quickly, just like many Ukrainian dissidents and Ukrainian journalists all fled. There's one in Spain now, one in Dubai. So then I applied to come to the Russian side and reported in Donbass and Crimea on and off for 2 years, I guess, on the front lines and in Donetsk, which is a really scary time to be there, the worst time to be there when the front line was on the edge of the city. And then for the last over 18 months or so, I've been in Moscow. In the end, I ended up claiming political asylum for various reasons. But as I'm sure you know, the UK and Europe are pressing journalists, people being arrested.
No, the epitome of human rights and freedom of speech is oppressing journalism. How could that be? Was that convincing enough?
Yeah, I think in America, I think is in a way better than Britain and Europe now. In America, there's increasing repression as well. But I think Britain and Germany, in terms of arresting journalists critical of NATO, I think Britain and Germany are the worst. So,
Oh no, Czech. I don't know how it'll change under Babich, but in Czech, they were given up to 3-year terms for criticizing NATO. And I'm not
well,
talking about being on Russia's side, but we're spending too much on NATO. This is that. You can get up to 3 years, and that's been that way for like 7 or 8 years.
wow. Yeah, it's different. I mean, obviously, I know many alternative journalists, if you want to call people like, I guess you as well, that. But and it's different in every country, and it's different for every person. It's how much, which country you're from. It's how much of a threat they see you as. If you've kind of crossed any lines, if there's anything they think they can get you on, it's different for everybody. And so some people are sort of, think I should be safe going back to the UK. I'm not sure. Maybe I will be. Maybe if relations between Britain and Russia improve, maybe I will be. So I'm sort of leaving it open at the moment. But at the moment, the British security state is at war with Russia.
Well,
It's
not just Russia. I mean, look what they did to George Galloway,
well,
member
George
of
is just different.
parliament, head of a registered political party in parliament.
Absolutely, George is now effectively in exile. I think he's now in Russia now. Yeah, so I mean, I've had so many threats to shut me down. It's just escalated as my works got bigger, to the extent that I have extreme phone hacking, constant phoning, threatening to kill my loved ones. Not just online stuff, you don't really care about that, but the hardcore professionally sent stuff. And so now I'm not doing too much work. I make a TV show, but I'm sort of scaled down my work a lot just to try and recover from the last 3 years of war reporting. I feel like even being in Moscow for the last year, I feel like I'm still being in the war, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, so you caught me on a day where on a sort of week that I'm sort of just trying to be on holiday and chill out and forget about the war. But then the Iran war starts, and I know people in
Yeah.
Iran, so I'm worried about them as well.
I keep telling everybody, somebody needs to give Trump a tranquilizer, or at least for a couple of days, give everybody a break to breathe.
I mean, I interviewed maybe perhaps Russia's top Iran experts just before the war in Iran started, and he said, I can't, but I don't think Russia's the Americans going to go to war with Iran because, and he listed everything. I mean, he got everything else right, but he listed it that it's just not in American strategic interest, that they'll break their teeth on the rock that is Iran, he said. And the Iranian people will rally around the government. And I think, Trump's generals, Trump's allies, the British were against the war in Iran. They knew it would damage British and European economy. And even the Russians tried to warn Trump, but don't do it. But it's looking like it's going to be a disaster.
Oh, it is. It already is. And it's a disaster for all the people who are dying, too. Well, the problem is, I'll tell you, first of all, I came back in 2010 and I was warning people and people in the government this war was coming. Nobody wanted to hear that. Nobody wanted to hear that. I mean, I was helping, I was when I was a staff 82nd Airborne. I'm sorry, not 82nd, 18th Airborne Corps in G3. We were operations and we were, all the scenarios we were running was war with Russia. So it's like they've got that intent. But on this, I spent 3 years of still explaining to people what Christian Zionists are. I know there are Christian Zionists in the UK. There are a lot of them in the US, obviously, and in power now. But most of Europe, Russia, and all, they're clueless about what these people are. They have no idea. And they look at you like you're insane when you start explaining it to them. Like, that you're the insane one. It's like, well, no. But I think they're starting to figure it out now.
Well, the influence that the Israelis or Zionists have over the United States and Britain and Europe is extreme. I mean, you just look at the British press, how many people they pay, how many journalists they pay, and all the rest of it. Britain's just not a sovereign country. It's controlled by the Americans and the Israelis. And of course, America, I'm a fan of Tucker Carlson.
Yes, yes.
I'm on the left, basically, but, Tucker Carlson's, he's really standing up for it. Charlie Kirk did, and it looks like the Israelis got him. We don't know, but that's,
Oh,
but
yeah.
the influence. And I was saying to the other on the other day, I think I was doing an interview or some conference the other day, and I said the problem with the United States now is that to be in the American president, the chance of him getting assassinated by his own people, by his own deep state or whatever, or by his allies is so strong. You look at Russia. I don't know China very well, but I presume it's the same. You look at Russia, Putin is very unlikely to be killed by his own security state, or by his allies. The Chinese and the Iranians aren't going to kill Putin. But you look at the United States, the president of the United States, if he doesn't make enough allies, his own country or his allies, Israel, can kill him. So it's very hard for anybody in America to really change things. I don't know whether Trump really wanted to, or whether he's just found it too hard.
Well, look, America got rid of two presidents back to back, basically. Kennedy got assassinated, and Nixon got framed. And why? Because even though they were different parties, but they both had the same message at point. Look, we can live with the Soviets. They've got their sphere, we got our sphere. Let's just live and get along. But that's not good for business. That's horrible for business. Well, that business anyways, and war is good business. So yeah, I mean, you mean lower tensions, trade, get along? No. They couldn't kill Nixon because I guess it would be a little too conspicuous. Another one got whacked, so they framed him. And the stuff they framed him was child's play for the day. It wouldn't even hit the news these days, compared to what these politicians are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's really tough to see what they can do about it. Both the Russians and the Iranians are now calling them Europe and America the Epstein coalition.
Oh, it is.
I
It's the Epstein
think
elites.
there's a lot of truth to that, and a lot of degeneracy in the elites. I don't know how well British politics, but it
A
seems.
bit. I've dabbled into it. Not like that American politics,
So,
obviously,
but
but.
it seems that everybody around power is all some kind of deviant sexual pervert as well.
Yep.
And I don't think that's any kind of coincidence. I was thinking today, I've covered half a dozen wars and revolutions, etc. But to fight to secure your own sovereignty as a country, you need to risk your life. You need It's tough.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, what the number is now, but how many Russian soldiers have died in Donbass? A lot, whatever the figure is.
I wouldn't say anyways. It's some military censorship. I'm an officer at the end of
You
the
asked me
day.
18 months ago, I
So.
would have been able to give you I think a good figure, but now I don't even know anymore. I mean, I don't the numbers of who knows, but that's the sacrifice you need to make for your own
Yeah.
sovereignty. And I think Britain, and you can speak more about America, but for Britain and Europe, you need to be able to sacrifice to retain your sovereignty. And British and European politicians just are not willing to. Which British European politicians are willing to give their lives, risk their lives, for the security and the sovereignty of Britain and Europe? And that's how it's been taken over by United States policy and Israeli policy. And so that's why Europe, that's why even the Russian politicians, right throughout this conflict in Ukraine, they can't, even at the highest level, even when I hear Putin and Lavrov speak, I think they can't understand, because it's not playing by geopolitical rules. Europe is not acting in its own interests. And so the Russians are just confused, because the Russians are very much, the world is a chessboard, we play our pieces. And they can't figure out why Europe isn't playing chess with them. They're just acting in this degenerate, with this degenerate foreign policy. And you're starting to see even the highest level Russian politicians even use those words, this degeneracy in the West, because they're not acting in their own interests. And that's, I wrote a tweet the other day and said, what do you do about that? I've been trying to persuade Britain and Europe. That's been my work over the last 3, 4 years, to say this is not in our interests. Make peace with Russia. Have good relations. By the way, you realize they're not playing this game. They're playing by some other rules.
What you said earlier, you're on the left, Carlson's on the right. I guess I'd be on the right too. But
Well,
that's
it
the
creeps me
problem.
down on the
That's a false dialectic. For the modern world, that's an absolutely false dialectic. The real dialectic is globalist and nationalist, or localist, whatever you want to call it. It's the guy that wants to take care of his people in this country. Which economic theory he wants to follow is secondary. But I want to, I want prosperity for my people versus the people that go, you're biomatter. I'm the transnational elite and you're just biomatter. That's all you are, consumer, producer, and go die off when you need to die off.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I have people who follow my work come to see me when they visit Moscow. Just anybody, sometimes journalists, other times just normal people who follow my and say, "Oh, Jenny, I'd love to meet up for coffee in Moscow." And it's sometimes it's someone on the left, like hard left communist, to really appreciate something. Sometimes the real conservative, it's like people on the right and the left, support my work and support your work. Because it's exactly what you're saying, that the British and Europeans and indeed the Americans are not acting in their own national
No,
interest. It's,
no, no, no. I
and
mean,
to a large
what
degree,
could possibly be the American interest in fighting Iran? Right, what is the American interest in fighting Iran?
if they could win the war easily, I could see that. It's same with the war in Ukraine. If they were able to use Ukraine in order to overthrow the Russian government, put in a pro-Western oligarch, maybe split up Russia into different countries. At least I could see this, because that is their strategy. That's,
Oh, it
they've
is. Yeah, of course it is.
if they could achieve that, at least I would see the strategy behind it. Okay, I understand. Okay, but my argument from the start, I'm sure similar to yours, is the problem is you're not going to succeed. Ukraine is not going to be able to defeat Russia. The sanctions aren't going to work, and the Russian government is strong, stable, has huge support, has vast support. So you're not going to be able to achieve those aims. Therefore, you're only going to fail and damage yourself. That's essentially what it is. And it's the same with Iran, unless there's something we're not seeing, that overthrowing the Iranian government, putting in a pro-Western Shah or corrupt whatever, and taking their oil. I could see that. I can understand that. And the Israelis' plan, which isn't even regime change. The Israelis' plan is to destroy Iran, cut it up, and because
Genocide.
they don't want regime change, because in 10 years' time, that whatever regime could well become more nationalistic again. These want to destroy Iran. The British and the Americans more want the oil. But so I would understand the policy of taking out Iran if they would achieve it. But as it looks like it's playing out, they're not going to achieve that, and they're only going to damage once again, just like Ukraine damaged their own economies.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, right now we've entered a phase of now the oil wars. So we went day one, by the second half of the day became a regional war because Iran is now joined by Iraq and by Yemen. Day two, it became a religious war because now it's the avenge Khomeini's death and Hezbollah's in this fight, and there's unrest, serious unrest in Pakistan and Bahrain and other areas. And then this kind of went on for a while, and then now we've gotten into something much even worse than that, and that's now we're into A, the oil war, where they're shooting each other's infrastructure, and the Israelis have upped it one more time to desalination plants, except that 5% of the Iranian population is dependent on desalination plants, and 75% of the Israeli population is dependent on desalination plants. And I'm not going to talk about the Persian Gulf Arabs, which are artificial countries that can't survive on their own. Their populations are almost 100% on imported food and desalination. They don't have water. These giant populations, they've ballooned out, they can't support them.
Yeah, and it does look like it's the Israelis who have hit the oil and the desalination. It looks like even today the Americans, I think, have criticized the Israelis or even going to fly there. Witkoff and what is his name, Kushner, going to fly there to say, look, stop doing this. But the Israelis are, the Americans also said that the Israelis were going to bomb, so that's why we had to bomb. I'm not sure. Year or 20 years' time, we might find out the real reasons. But the Israelis have been trying to pull the Americans in, and they're crazy. They're religious fundamentalists, the Israelis. Look at the
Also, are half the people in the U.S. government right now. Just a slight.
I've done quite a bit of work with Iranian TV. I've been to Iran a couple of years ago because I know the Iranians, quite well. They're very reasonable people. People say that Iran is a fundamentalist religious government. I mean, it is a democratic theocracy, I guess I'd say, or theocracy with democratic elements to it. But and they are becoming more liberal in terms of dress code. And when I was in Iran, Iran is a mixed country, just like any country. In America, half the country hates Trump and half the country loves Trump. I'm speaking simply. In Britain, half the country supports Brexit and half the country doesn't. In Iran, you have huge support for the Islamic Republic, very religious people, very super nice people. Then you have some more of the liberal, pro-Western liberal types who want the country to be more like Dubai, to be able to, you talk to young people like, oh, we want to drink in the street. You can basically do anything you want in Iran behind in your own apartment. Anything goes in your own apartment, but they want to buy, but basically it's more like Dubai. I mean, even I went down to the river, the waterfront, and they had a theme park, and they were playing on the loudspeakers Jay-Z and Beyonce music. There's a lot more, and some of the shops I found pictures being sold of Marilyn Monroe and Freddie Mercury, and Jesus, of course. They have a huge respect for Jesus there, but
Yeah,
it's
there's what,
around.
600 churches inside of Iran.
I went to a beautiful
Yeah.
church, a beautiful Armenian church, which is a museum as well, beautifully looked after and restored. So, there's differences of opinion around, but it's like nothing that people would expect. And the government is much more rational than the Israeli government.
Oh,
I'll
good
certainly say
Lord.
that.
That's not hard to achieve. Seriously speaking, that's not hard to achieve. And look, by the Iranian constitution, all the religious minorities and ethnic minorities have representation in the government. They may only have one person in the government. Jews have a representation in the government. Jews serve in the Iranian military and are even officers in the Iranian military. I doubt too many Persians are officers in the Israeli military, or would ever be trusted. But
Yeah,
they're a mad theocracy that wants to destroy the world, or so we're
absolutely. I
told
mean,
constantly.
talking to people in Iran, that even sort of liberals who like want to open their own tattoo parlor, I think tattoos are allowed, are they?
Are
Anyway.
they allowed? Because
Well,
Muslims aren't supposed to be that. Muslims and Jews cannot
yeah.
have tattoos.
Yeah.
Christians are not supposed to, but there's no real
No, I spoke to one young woman who was in a hipster-like coffee shop serving coffee, and she I said, "What do you want to do?" "I want to open a tattoo parlor." But even the more liberal types, the first thing almost all of them, even the ones who want more kind of religious freedom. Although now people walking around without hijabs, even a couple of years ago, people without, but they say it's the economy. The economy is the problem, and that's almost everybody. Because that's mainly because of the sanctions. The sanctions have really damaged Iran. The sanctions haven't really damaged Russia. In some respects, they've actually been beneficial for Russia.
Oh, very.
But Russia's been able to withstand the sanctions, which is why they're prevailing. One of the major reasons. But the sanctions have really hurt and continue to hurt Iran, and that also continue to really hurt Cuba. I've got a journalist friend in Cuba, who he I mean he says it's bad. He's lived there a long time. He said the sanctions are really, really hurting Cuba. And now you've got Trump threatening Cuba, and I think we're
Oh,
going to
yeah.
see something major there. And just like the Americans tried to take down Russia, they failed. They've tried to take down Iran. Looks like they're going to fail. But in their own hemisphere, if they really want to change Cuba, let's be honest, they probably could. And especially
They could.
the sanctions have really, really damaging Cuba. It's how do you how, and how do the Russians and the Chinese help? The Russians and the Chinese have helped. The Iranians were huge help to the Venezuelans when Chavez was still in power, much more even than the Russians. But how, Russia can win a war on its own borders, but it's very hard if the Americans want to take out Venezuela or Cuba. It's very hard for the Russians and Chinese to really do much
Oh,
about.
absolutely. Well, with the problem too, there used to be a saying: there's only two solid countries in South America, Chile for the Americans, Cuba for the Soviets. Everything else is in play. The problem with Latin culture, and I'm going back Latin culture all the way to the Roman Empire, is every general wants to be the emperor. I mean, how many do you have? Even the era of the generals that just were killing each other off. The emperor's lifespan was about a year. Maybe a year and a half, he was really lucky before the next general offed him and sat on the throne, got offed himself, and so on and so on. But that has translated into with the Spanish, the Portuguese, and down on to Latin America. Everybody wants to be the emperor. You can always buy a general. You can't do that with Slavs, particularly Russians. We don't have a history of that. We don't, I mean, emperors were assassinated and replaced by other emperors, usually, on the same line. And even if the military played a role, they always played a role to a civilian leadership, not to a general. Same with the Persians. And that's another thing. That's a problem with the Arabs too. Two generals in a room is a conspiracy. Those sheikhs are more afraid of their own generals than they are afraid of the Israelis. But the Persians don't have that problem for obvious reasons. It's just the cultural differences. So yeah, I mean they bought out one of the generals in Venezuela. He stood down the anti-aircraft systems, and they flew in. Because those Chinooks are not, if you've never been around a Chinook, they're huge, they're loud, they're slow. It's pretty hard to miss one. Flying that low, I mean, you can hear them coming from a mile away, quite literally.
So do you think Venezuela is effectively being brought into the American sphere now, or is it a bit more complicated than that?
It may be more complicated than that, but I think Rodriguez is definitely moving in that direction. She wants to be in power. And the Americans are made now. Machada, even giving away her Nobel Peace Prize, is still screwed. She got tossed under the bus by Trump, so I'm sure her party and her side is not very happy right now. She even gave away her Nobel Peace Prize. At least she didn't give away the prize itself. Just the medal.
Oh,
So
Guido, whatever happened to Guido? Is he still kicking around?
he's somewhere kicking around. He's a nobody. Yeah, he's a loser, as they would say. That's it. You couldn't prove yourself. We set you up. You still can grab power. So goodbye. You're used material. It's the American way with things like that.
Yeah, I'm just doing a piece now about Reza Pahlavi.
Oh God.
Sitting around and will never be the leader of Iran, and they know that. But he's good for mobilizing propaganda or
Oh,
social
yeah.
And people abroad, so he's useful. But I wonder if he thinks he might be in power in Iran again. Maybe he's so delusional that he thinks he would be.
I think he does. I think he very much so does. Yeah, I'm a monarchist. I don't deny that. I'm a constitutional monarchist, but that's not a monarch. That's a front man who's already promised to give everything away to the Americans. Just put me into power, I'll give you everything. It's like, yeah, that's monarchs tend to be nationalistic. That's a little problem with them. This guy is, I mean, this guy is just, he's a whore. I mean, I don't know where
What
else to put
I'm
it.
worried about the piece I'm doing is that it's clear that Pahlavi has gets on well with the British and the French, but he's been trying to get influence with the Germans, essentially to persuade the Germans to get on board and bomb Iran. The
Yeah.
reason the British and the Germans didn't want to bomb Iran is because they knew that it would damage British and European interests. And the British particularly also feel that sanctions is working on Iran and that bombing them would just pull the people together, which they lie about that. But it's just crazy now. Britain and Europe are now going along with this war in Iran, damaging their own interests.
Yeah.
They just have no sovereignty anymore. You think Margaret Thatcher? I think she would have been against Ukraine and Iran, bombing Iran as
Oh,
well.
yeah.
Because she would understand that it's not in British interests. But yeah. So yes, but Britain has a constitutional monarchy. We're not going to.
Well, Britain is an interesting point, though, because realistically speaking, the monarch has absolute right to rule.
Sure.
They
Yeah.
don't choose to rule directly.
Yeah.
But it's hard to believe. Okay, I'm not going to talk about Charles, but his mother, the richest woman in the world. Who has the military and the police pledging loyalty to her, not the parliament? You cannot tell me she has no power or had no power.
You're right. Technically, they almost have absolute power. Technically, they have the royal prerogative. But the Queen Elizabeth, I kind of have some. I mean, I don't mind the constitutional monarchy. I mean, if Britain didn't have a monarch, they'd have a president, he'd be just as corrupt. So I think,
More so, believe me, more so.
particularly if, I mean, a few hundred years ago, we got rid of the king, killed him, and then couldn't handle it and brought another one back. So,
Well,
I
come on,
think.
when Cromwell canceled theaters, music, and smiling, that's
I
you
mean,
don't
I
make
think,
friends that way.
I think it can be quite a good stabilizing force. But Elizabeth, I kind of like, I had respect for Elizabeth. I think everybody had respect for Elizabeth. She hated the Israelis as well, I think. She wouldn't have Israelis. The story, she wouldn't allow Zionists or Israelis into the palace. I think I heard
Oh,
that.
really?
Then she's back from that era when British politicians didn't trust the Israelis and weren't controlled by them. But now you have Charles, who's a very unimpressive individual. And I think the monarchy is really going to suffer under him. William seems okay, actually. He seems fine. So, but I think the monarchy is really going to suffer under Charles because he's a thoroughly unimpressive individual.
Well, you know the curse of the Charleses. I mean, look at the British history. Every time there's a monarch named Charles, everything goes to hell. I mean, it's just it's an interesting little coincidence. Just
Yeah.
like the start of the various wars in the Middle East all fall on Peru, Purim, Pur Purim,
Right.
the Israeli holiday.
Yeah, well, there might be a reason for that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, yeah, I think maybe they shouldn't name their ch kids Charles anymore, perhaps.
Forbid that name. That's a forever forbidden name. No more Charles's ever again. We've learned our lesson three times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. You're absolutely right. What do you think? There's a lot of people who think Britain is either already in the first rounds of a civil war or on the very edge of a civil war. Do you give credence to that, or is that
Yeah, I mean, I've covered ethnic cleansing before in Africa and in Myanmar, and it's like, people just wake up one morning and start hacking to death their neighbors and burning down their villages and all the rest of it. I mean, so I've seen how that happens. And you kind of think, in Europe, in Britain, oh, well, obviously it would never happen in Europe or Britain. It only happens in Africa or Asia. No, let me tell you. British and Europeans and Africans and Asians, we're essentially the same people. We are human. We have very different
Right.
cultural differences and whatever. But I mean, to human beings in every country, we are the same. And so to think that it can't happen in Britain and Europe, civil war, ethnic cleansing, let me tell you, it can, and likely it will at some point. I hope I'm dead by that time, but because it's horrendous and it's horrific. It's the worst thing. Ethnic cleansing is the worst thing I've ever covered. But in answer to your question, I mean, I think there really can be. I mean, if the economy gets much, much worse, and now you're seeing this. Like, I don't even call it right-wing, and nationalist anti-immigrant sentiment is rising like a balloon. It's rising fast. For many years I've been against immigration to Europe. I said I'm a leftist, but I could see myself voting a right-wing party because immigration is just a sensible right-wing party, not Nigel Farage. But immigration is a major, major problem. I mean,
Oh,
in
yeah.
Britain, and I'm against it from a leftist perspective, that it's essentially neoliberal capitalism or globalism, if you want to say it, or bringing immigrants in, lowering the living standards. But also because, look, I mean, I've traveled much of the world, and I love Russia. I mean, I'm in Russia now. Russia is one of my favorite countries. Europe is my favorite continent, but wonderful countries all around the world. The first time you go to Cairo is, I don't know if you've ever been to Cairo, and
No, not
magnificent.
yet.
Magnificent city. It's a city of 1,000 minarets, and it's like feels like a different world, Wonderful places all around the world. And why shouldn't Britain and Europe have its own culture as well? So and you also do have, we could talk a long time about migration issues and communities in Britain just creating their own communities, and now particularly Muslim communities as well, essentially saying, well, we don't want to be part of the British community. So what do you do about all this? So you're seeing that sentiment rise in an extreme way. The only reason Brexit got over the line was because people didn't want immigration. That's how it got
Oh,
over the
yeah.
line. And now you're having reform. Nigel Farage looks like he'll win the next election. They're not voting for Nigel Farage because of his scintillating economic policies. They're
Which are
voting.
nothing new. It's the same thing as everybody else.
But it's the anti-immigration sentiment is rising in an extreme manner, and even in Britain now, you're having even the rise of more ethno-nationalism. People who are even becoming more mainstream are saying, "Look, there's nothing wrong with being white and British."
Right.
You're seeing huge changes politically, and there was riots last year or 2 years ago, and then you had communities, the minority communities, running around the streets with machetes. So could there be civil war in Britain if the economy, and I think things have to be done about it. Britain, London is now minority white. If you said 30 years ago that London had been minority white, people would call you a far right racist. Well, actually, you were just right.
Yep.
So, and so that is going to get, less and less indigenous people, and with that. And if the economy gets worse, which it looks like it will, particularly if the economy really gets bad, I mean, and that can really, really happen. That's when things really change, when people start, the economy gets really bad, you see huge political changes.
Oh, yeah.
So I fear that Britain is in real trouble in the long term with the migration issue, yeah.
I'm not against my immigrants, but it has to be, you have to do it correctly. You identify where you actually need people, not to skirt the market and just flood the market with cheap labor. But if you need scientists, you need to be, highly skilled people, really high, and in small enough quantities you can assimilate them. If they can't form their own communities, they're gonna get assimilated. One generation, two generations, they get some. You let too many in, they form their own communities, they never get assimilated. And then you have a dual, two communities under one roof. It never works. It always leads to war.
Absolutely. I mean, Russia has its own problems as well.
Of
Don't forget
course.
the birth rate. I mean, I went to Putin's end of year speech with the public, and they spent about half an hour speaking about Russia's demographic problems. And Vladimir Putin was like, "I want people to marry young, have kids young, all this kind of stuff." And then a 25-year-old woman in the audience, a Russian woman, said, "Look, I've just finished university. Now I need to start my career." So it's a real problem in European, I include Russian in that. Our society's of such a low birth rate, and that's for various different factors. So I think Europe and Russia needs to kind of go the opposite of a one-child policy in China. You ban abortion or whatever, all these things. Russia's a capitalist country as well. So, is there enough money for families to feel that they can have more than one child and the rest of it? So I think it's a real problem in Britain and Russia. But in terms of immigration, and Russia has a lot of immigration as well. If you go to parts of Moscow, it's very, different than the center. But Russia, I'm thinking about what I'm doing now. I need to get out of political asylum. I'd have to get temporary residence here. It's very hard to get, well, hard and easy, but to get citizenship, for example, or even residency, you
Oh,
have to prove that you're good for the economy, you're all this stuff. Even now, I think to get permanent residence, you have to join the army for a year, which is going to go
that
to.
is, yeah, that's a law that, I know quite a few members of parliament. I wouldn't mind getting into parliament myself. That is something that came out of the blue. And I think it was from what people are saying, members of parliament said, they didn't see this coming. It didn't come through parliament. It came down as executive order. And it was badly put together because the aim seems to have been to try to get people from Central Asia to go serve to get permanent residency. Well, first of all, nobody's going to serve for permanent residency. Let's be realistic. Maybe citizenship. But second of all, there were no experts on immigration consulted, anything of the sort. And it just, yeah, it just. It just blew up in the wrong direction and just went badly. It was put together badly.
That's really interesting. But my point is that it's much harder to be an immigrant or move to whatever to Russia. They're trying to make it easier for Westerners and traditional values to
Right.
move to Russia. So, but generally, you've kind of and you've got to prove that you align with Russian values, tradition, whether you can help the economy, all these things. Whereas in Britain and Europe, it seems to be. You just got off a
Across the
boat. You
channel.
just got off a boat. You can't help the economy. Whatever, we'll put you up in a hotel. And just seems totally insane. You don't align with British values. Who cares? Doesn't matter. You're in. So Russia seems to have a sensible policy to protect their culture, to protect their society. And the big problem in Russia, I think one of I said I'm a leftist. I get in some trouble posting on X occasionally with all the leftist people that follow me, saying the importance of patriotism. Britain, you really need the importance, you need some flag or something to rally around. That's why Putin is very good with promoting patriotism and promoting religion as well. Things that you fight for, things that hold a society together. Whereas, Britain and Europe, who's gonna really fight and sacrifice for what? For an economic zone, for are these immigrants who come in really gonna fight for
Wait, 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 wait. Haven't you seen the posters for We Are Europe? One white girl, an Arab, an African, and a Pakistani. And then defend Europe. It's all white guys. No, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the post. I mean, the hypocrisy is just
Yeah,
it's off the counter.
I think it is part of this globalist idea that we'll make the whole country brown people. It's all about the economy. We break down nationalism, and nationalism's more of a dirty word in Russia, because it's a federal
Right.
republic. But we get rid of nationalism, we get rid of patriotism, we'll get rid of religion. We'll just break up so they're much easier to control. Bring in lots of immigrants. But of course, they forgot to tell Russia and China and Iran that they're not going to play this game. So instead, you've got this kind of globalist idea, which is actually not going to work on a global scale, and it's just destroying Western countries. That seems to be the plan, and why they hate Putin so much, because Putin says, "No, thank you. That doesn't work for us." And China, you're not going to break down China.
Well,
So.
the problem, I flat out say, the problem of demographics, and this isn't just Russia. Somebody accused me once of he's not a real leftist. Well, I've never been a leftist. So it's like, oh, you hit on the side. But you have to come at you have to come at solutions from different directions. On the one hand, the problem of demographics is because you've convinced women that having a career is much better for them than having a family, which goes against nature. So instead of having kids that love you, you have a boss that doesn't give a damn about you. When you get 55, get out, and you're all by yourself and your cats. Oh, that's a great future. On the flip side, and here's the other portion of it, you cannot have multi-children families if you have small apartments. It's people, you need to disperse the people out of the cities to villages, suburbs where they have room to stretch their legs. Kids are running around instead of cramped up in apartments. And even then, you have to help families, especially larger families, get apartments. If that means the government builds townhouses at its expense and then hands it to them, not rents, but gives it to them into ownership. Oh, that's socialist. Yeah, but when they don't have to pay rent, they spend money on other things, and that promotes the economy. Plus, you promote a building, construction, that's promoting the economy. So.
Absolutely. And this is, I wrote a post about it, in Vladimir Putin's end of year speech, and they spent half an hour talking about this. And obviously it's very important to Putin and the Russian government, but after half an hour talking, they really didn't come up with a solution, and so the Russian, you'll know people in the Russian government much better than I do, but you're absolutely right that there needs to be much more severe changes, and it's economic and it's social, as you say. Women, just like in Russia, just pretty much probably the similar statistics in the West, that they work, they need jobs. You need both parents to work. As you quite rightly say, it's very hard for women to have more than one kid or two, three kids when they're working. Absolutely, so, and they
Exactly. And that's
have.
another restructuring of the economy where it can be supported by, and I'm not talking about just for the rich, but the average centrist class, and maybe even the upper lower classes, that can be, a family can be supported by one income, which doesn't mean subverting the marketplace with too much cheap labor from other countries, but means increasing productivity by technology. But it has to be such a society that the father can support a wife and two kids at least,
They do, or Russia's going to disappear pretty much as fast as Europe. And how is Russia going to fight the next war with far less people, or people who aren't willing to fight for Russia? I mean, that's what's done it in this war, a mixture of paying soldiers well, but also, I can tell you, I spent a lot of time on the front lines
Me
for
too.
people defending the motherland and all of this. So I think there needs to be major change. I think Russia realizes that. What they're going to do about it, it's Russia's better placed, because I don't know if whether you agree. I'd broadly describe Russia as being state capitalism.
It is state capitalism. I believe in state capitalism.
It's
It
run
works.
by the security services, basically, with Putin as the head of the security services. But so therefore, Russia is able to better make the ideas that you're talking about in practice. I can't see Britain or European countries even getting close to being able to do that, because it's run by corporations. It's run by, in Britain, each prime minister, we've had about four prime ministers in 4 years, and the ministers, as soon as they leave office, it's just a stepping stone for them to go into a corporate. It's just so corrupt, and there's a lot of corruption in Russia as well, but at least the state ultimately controls things. So Russia is better placed to be able to make these changes, but I think there have to be major changes in Britain and Russia, or as Elon Musk keeps writing, that white people are dying out, and
Well,
it's a
it's not
problem.
just white people. Honestly speaking, if you look at it across the world, even countries where populations are growing, the growth rate is collapsing. There's and that's like Africa and a couple other countries, but the growth rate even there is collapsing. It may still be positive, but it's a much smaller positive than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and the trajectory is to zero. And there's a lot of reasons for it, but the biggest, I think, is just when you convince women that you're better off having a career than having a family, you've just killed society. That's it. There's no next generation. That's it. And the problem is with no next generation, which the Japanese and the South Koreans are learning right now, is children drive the economy. Young families spend a lot more money than the elderly. The elderly suck money out of the economy. They're not producing, they're sucking their savings out. They don't need a big house. They don't need a new car. They don't need Pampers. Oh, maybe they do, but that's for them, not for kids. They don't need new kids' clothes. And their consumption goes down a lot. Their production is non-existent. And somebody has to take care of them. So you're spending money on them. They're not making anything. I mean, if you're just looking from an economic point of view, I'm not talking about, it's your parents, you're going to take care of them. That's a whole separate issue. But strictly from an economic point of view, when society ages, you go to depression. All those extra houses, nobody needs them. That's the baby boomers in America right now. They're trying to sell off their big expensive houses. Nobody can afford them. They're just standing there on the market. That's it. The next two generations are broke.
Yeah.
Or three Absolutely. Generations.
Yeah, and I think similar in Japan, I think they have similar major problems as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and I don't see, as I said, even I don't see the Russian government doing enough, even
No,
to
it's
realize,
not.
well, you've
Not
got
in
to
my view.
start, you need to really start, as I said, like China's, the opposite of China's one-child policy. You have to go extreme action to change society.
You know, China got rid of the one child policy. It's have as many kids as you want. Have
But
more
it is
kids.
difficult because most of
It
the women,
is.
half my friends in the world and in Russia are women, and they're
Yeah.
journalist friends there, whatever. I can't think of many of my female friends who want to give up their career just to have kids because they're just as smart and as ambitious as me, or what they want.
Yeah.
They're interested in doing things in their life. It's changing a whole mentality. Putin was talking about in this press conference, encouraging Russian artists to do a lot more films about the family and all that kind of stuff. And I think there does have to be, but it's almost going to take a generation to change the mindset of people. And by that time, it's almost too late. But I
No,
think.
it's never too late. As long as you control migration that comes in, so you're not swamped, it's never too late. I mean, look, historically, this has happened many times. The reason liberalism dies out is how many kids do liberals have? How many kids do conservative religious people have? And most kids retain the culture of their family that they were raised with. So it oscillates. This is not the first time this has happened in history. It's happened quite a few times. Liberalism just dies out in one or two generations because they don't breed. They don't have kids. That's it. They don't have a future. But while they're there, they knock society down quite a bit. And then it has to pick itself up. But once you add open borders and you just flood a society in with who knows whom, that's it. You've knocked off the entire natural process.
So the liberals are dying out. Well, that's good, some good news at least.
I'm
But
not
yeah,
a
but
globalist. Those little bastards have traditional families. Well, seriously, look at them. Most globalists have very traditional families. And they don't let their kids sit on telephones. They do basic education. I mean, the way it used to be. Their wives are stay at home. They have three, four, five kids or 11 like Musk. They actually have very traditional families. They just don't want you to have a traditional family.
Sure. But so I think that's why Russia has a much better policy, at least than Europe, because the European policy has just been, we can't be bothered trying to fix our economy. We'll just let migrants in, and that, I mean, it's just insane. And I think, for Europe, because it really is a kind of ideological battle at the moment as well between Russia and the European elites. Even the LGBT thing, which has become a bit of a kind of one side. The Ukrainians are posting pictures of gay soldiers marrying each other, and they even had a transsexual spokesperson, who is, of course, Russia's, very much against. I mean, it's not, they're not a normal Russian. It's just like, do what you want, just, don't flaunt it in the street kind of thing, which is not. But even that's become a kind of battleground between this ideology of more conservative traditionalism, and the kind of insanity which has taken over the West, in terms, particularly the gender stuff and all that kind of, that's just gone off. That's insane.
There's many reasons why I left the US and came back to Russia. One of the biggest ones being this is my motherland and I wanted home, but I didn't want my kids growing up in that environment, but as an Orthodox Christian. But having said that, in my worst of worst nightmares, I could have never foreseen this transgender crap. You're chopping off little boys' gonads, chopping off little girls' breasts, feeding them full of hormone blockers that destroy their organs, destroy their bones, kill them slowly. I knew I would have, at that, I would have laughed. And then you're sitting there going,
It's
thank
gone
God I
insane.
left.
I know some gay people in London. I know the art scene very well, and I'm sure there's many gay people in Russia in the art scene and whoever as well.
Oh yeah,
But
absolutely.
it's like so. But the insanity of the trans stuff and trans. There'd be trans people in Russia. There are weird people everywhere. But the pushing of that ideology, and as you said,
Oh yeah.
the from the kids and stuff. It's actually totally insane. I mean, it's really.
Satanic.
You even had the. I mean, I couldn't believe the just until recently, the chief of MI6 had his he/him pronouns in his X bio. And it's like, and I couldn't, I just can't believe it. This is the guy who basically runs the British security state and largely British foreign policy. And you've got your he/him pronouns in your X bio. What are you doing? And MI6 was talking about flying the gay flagpole. They got totally slaughtered about that online on X. So what are you doing? You're fighting a war with Russia, and you're in charge of British security and British foreign policy, and you've got your he/him pronoun. What, like, that's just insane. Like, that's why I talk about there's a real degeneracy of thought going on in the West, in Britain and Europe in particular. There's some more sanity under Trump, pushing against back, but Britain and Europe, it's actually just a real deep liberal insanity that's taken over and they're unable to even formulate sensible policies. And that runs right through the gender craziness, right through the open borders craziness, right through let's just fight wars that damage our own interests. It's the real degeneracy of thought that's taken over. And it's interesting, I mean, I've had these thoughts for many years, but actually being in Russia the last few years, it has kind of solidified how you see that there is another system, there's another way of doing things.
Yeah.
It's very normal. I said Russia is very. Russia feels almost, in terms of these policies, it feels like Britain in the 1980s kind of thing. In
Yeah.
terms, it's a bit more sensibleness. If you want to be gay, that's fine. Just don't flaunt it on the streets. Just.
Well, the so-called anti-gay bill, gay propaganda bill, actually, it never even says homosexuals. No sexual content to be propagated through minors. That includes heterosexual. At anything, just you leave the children out of it. That's what the bill is.
I saw Putin gay. There's a famous German composer who, because I was looking him up for some reason, famous German composer. He came out, but he's like 70 years old now. Very famous German composer. He spent a lot of time in Russia, and he came out as bisexual in 2024. 2025, there's a picture of Putin shaking his hand and giving him his Friendship of Russia award because he'd spent so much time in St. Petersburg. He calls himself a Putin fan. He's one of these Europeans who's not scared to say we should have good relations with Russia. And I saw he came out as a bisexual. Like, so, Russia is much more kind of, they don't really care. It's just don't promote it to children, all the rest of
Oh
it.
yeah.
It's much more, it just, it feels much more normal here rather than the West has gone in insane.
It is. It is. Even with, well, look, assisted suicide, things like that. They're pushing it hard. I mean, Canada is on the leading bleeding edge of that. If you're poor, we'll help you get rid of your poverty, by killing you. They had one of their Paralympic, I remember the article, one of their Paralympic sportsmen. She by because she was wheelchair bound now after her accident, by Canadian law, they were supposed to build her a ramp. So she puts a notification, a request to have a ramp built up to her house, their front door. And she gets a letter. Look, wouldn't you be better off dead? We'll help you, commit suicide. But if you think about it from a religious point of view, it suddenly makes sense. Suicide, at least for Christians, is the ultimate sin. Against God, it's damnation. Now, if you start looking at a lot of these Epstein elites that are conducting satanic rituals, I mean, they're eating children. If you believe even 10% of what these witnesses are saying, multiple, 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 multiple witnesses, then you're dealing with just a devil-worshipping psychopathic elite.
I spent about a week online when the whatever new charts came out, and I said, "Well, that's one of the darkest weeks I've had for a long
Oh
time."
yeah, me too, me too. Oh, I was like, geez, I was like, what you see in war zone isn't as bad as what you're reading on this, because this is with children. But what I'm saying is, if they're pushing suicide, they're
Sure.
doing sacrifices.
Yeah, no, it really is a kind of sick ideology. That's why I even bring up the example of the chief of MI6 putting his he/him pronouns. It's like, what are you doing? Like that's something. There's something wrong going on. And as you're saying, the sister dying, all the rest of it's a kind of crazy ideology, almost an experimentation with people trying to break their will. Yeah, it's really quite sick. And I think you need ultimately a real change of leadership. People hope that Trump would be that, but you need a real change of ideology and a change of leadership. There's a right anti-immigrant party now, a guy called Rupert Lowe of Restore Party. I don't know how much you follow politics.
I've heard of it, but I have no idea about it.
He's like, super active working at the border immigrants, but he's this old British, guy, a farmer slash businessman in the city. But he seems like just a reasonable guy. I think he's like, we're gonna, COVID, we made so many mistakes, no more this gender stuff. Just some more
Oh, common
sensible,
sense.
just common sense back.
So he's a Nazi.
But he's a Nazi,
Yeah,
involved with
I mean,
Nazis.
if you have
But
common sense, you got to be a Nazi, right? That's
he just
just a
seems
modern.
like this, very, not even very, just conservative British guy with three kids, works in the city, works as a farmer. Obviously you're quite rich, but just like a decent guy. Like, and he's been called a Nazi, of course. And but I think you need a real change to just decent people, whether they're on the right or the left. But unfortunately now the left wing in Britain, I get on better with more with conservative people now, because the left is deeply ideological as well. And so I think you really need, I think Britain, Europe may need a huge economic crisis to have a
A
real
crash,
problem
more
and
like
a
that
crash,
crash.
and then for sensible people to take power. And I think that's almost when good relations with Russia will come as well. When you have, because there's sensible people, mainly on the right wing, actually, conservatives, or at least they're the ones closer to power than the leftists who believe there should be, good relations with Russia. I think you're going to have that real change of complete change of ideology, because it seems like Russia now, the Soviet Union was ideological, but Russia now, it seems kind of bereft of ideology, which is probably a good thing. It's just trying to run a stable, successful
Well,
state.
we're by constitution, we're not allowed to have an ideology. And the constitution was written, by the way, by the State Department. Here's the problem. Russia does have an ideology, and it's growing from bottom up. It's that traditionalism, it's that Orthodox culture and everything else. If you don't have an ideology, you don't have a civilization. Because if you don't have a civilizational idea, and a civilization idea is ideology. What do you bring to the game? That is your civilizational idea. Otherwise, you're just a state. You come, you go, history puts a little note. There was a country, this name, this, and now it's gone. And there's millions of, I mean, maybe not millions, but the thousands of these little kingdoms, countries that came and went over the last 3,000 years, and nobody remembers them. There's only a
Sure.
few civilizations everyone remembers because they had a civilization idea that they pushed, that they were a civilization state. And that's ideology. I mean, that is ideology by a
Sure.
different
No,
name.
I hear you, and I think that is important. I think you do need that. So that's why I think Putin is absolutely right to be pushing this ideology, and how important it is. The only thing that's holding Iran together now, Iran is being bombed by the most powerful military force in the world and Israel, and it's taking on basically all its neighbors. But it looks like it'll survive, because you have this fervor of defending Iran, the religious element obviously very important, and which is much more powerful than the Iranian liberals, who just want to go to the bar and drink alcohol and have fun. That's not really an ideology. But so the importance of having an ideology and patriotism, all the rest of it, is absolutely essential. And Britain and Europe are losing that. What is their ideology now? Multiculturalism,
Never
economic
works, never worked.
multiculturalism, gender. You can be a guy, girl, important to be, super gay if you want to be, and multicultural. That's the ideology, and it's failing, and it's going to fail even worse. It's what is that as an ideology? That's why in Britain you are seeing, particularly, people realize that, that we should bring back, we should be more religious, we should be more Christian, the importance of Christianity, and the importance of, the British flag again, all this kind of stuff, because you need things to And that's why the Iranians actually, after the Islamic Revolution, didn't get on with the Soviets. I think the Ayatollah Khomeini, the first Ayatollah, wrote a letter to whoever it was, Khrushchev, who was in power in 79, the Soviets, not Khrushchev.
79, it was Brezhnev.
Isn't that, yeah, saying that the problem with the Soviet Union is that you don't have a god. You need to have to have religion. And since the end of the Soviet Union, and particularly under Putin, the Iranian-Russian relations have got much better because they both share the importance of God.
Well, that's interesting too, because Orthodoxy came back with a big rush in 1942, and the persecution of the church didn't commence until Khrushchev came into power after Stalin's death. Stalin backed off real quick. I mean, Sergei Posad was rebuilt. The seat of the patriarchy was rebuilt by young Komsomolets that were encouraged to go build the churches back. And then when Khrushchev came in, he started persecuting the church. Of course, it wasn't gulags anymore, but it was a psychological propaganda persecution, including pressure on ending your career if you didn't. But when he was removed by the Politburo, one of the accounts was that he overdid it with the church. That was one of the reasons for his removal. So it was a kind of a mix.
I
After that, it
remember.
was kind of, it's there, but we don't want to look at it and acknowledge it's there, but we're not going to do anything about it. So it's still there. Okay, well, but
I
so it.
remember being in Maidan in Kiev when they pulled down the statue of Lenin before the government fell, and in the dead of night, the huge big crowd pulled down the statue. And most Ukrainians didn't want their statues of Lenin to be pulled down. Soviet is part of their history. It's just.
Lenin created Ukraine.
Exactly. So most Ukrainians didn't want statues of Lenin pulled down, but of course the nationalists, the extremists, so they pulled this with the chalk and some chains, pulled down the statue of Lenin. It broke. I picked up a piece. I think I've still got it at my home in London. But one of the people there was a priest, Orthodox priest, and he was so happy. He's like telling me, "Oh my God, I've waited for this moment, this statue of Lenin being pulled down." So certainly. Yeah, I don't know. Were you an Orthodox Christian? Were they happy that Soviet Union ended, or?
It depends. The Soviet Union, I mean, look, under Lenin, under with Trotsky, Soviet Union was a very vicious place. And under Stalin, particularly beginning
I
earlier.
joke that I respect Stalin, as many most and probably most Russians do, but I think he would have killed me because I'm more of a kind of free thinking writer. He killed some of my favorite writers who were just basically weren't anti-communist. They just weren't pro-Stalin enough. So he killed a lot of people, even though I've got great respect for Stalin and what he did.
The Soviet Union mellowed out. That's about the best way to put it. And even Stalin mellowed out quite a bit after during World War II, and after World War II, he mellowed out. A lot of it mellowed out. The psychopathic revolutionary zeal, it died out. It died out particularly because that first generation died out, and that in the second generation. By the third generation, it was kind of like, yeah, we're a government, we're a bureaucracy, we run things. We kind of have an ideology, but okay, kind of. And it petered out because, at the end of the day, yeah, it didn't provide what was needed by the majority of the population, whether you like it or not. I mean, the biggest economy, what should have been the biggest economy in the world with the most resources, quite literally couldn't produce enough toilet paper. I mean, let's be honest about it. You had to wait 10 years to get a car, a new car. It's that, and people have certain wants and needs. And then when society can't provide it, that society doesn't, well, that government doesn't last very long afterwards. So, for that form of government, should have gone the way it's gone. I don't know. Maybe it should have gone the Chinese model. That may have been a better model. But, that's, it 30 years ago is 30 years ago. We can't change anything one way or the other. We just learn from it. So, well, I've got to run myself, and we've been I've kept you for quite a long time. I want to thank everybody for joining our conversation. I'll have John on again, and if, I think there'll be quite a bit to speak about what's happening in the UK over the next couple of months. The way everything from Iran, the fallout from Iran is going to be very vicious, I think, for the Europeans.
Yeah, well, great to speak to you, and I'm sure we'll speak again in sometime in the future. Yeah, great. It's great to
Absolutely.
speak to you.
Everybody, thank you. Thank you for joining us. And leave your comments in the comment section. And I'll make sure John has the links. Cheers.
Bye.